Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom as we close out the year 2014. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, author of the Prayer Prescription Series and creator of Kate Loving Prayer Podcast, Prayer Prescriptions that Rewire Assumptions About Your Everyday Reality. My guest today is Gina Vucci, is the co-creator with Shakti Gawain of the newly published New World Library book called The Relationship Handbook, A Path to Consciousness Healing and Growth. Joining me now is Gina Vucci. Hello, Gina.
Hi, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy that you can come and discuss with my audience this important topic. It's very profound. So tell us a little bit how you came to write the book with Shakti. I know you've had a long relationship with her and partnership.
Yeah. I've been working with Shakti for 16 years, and January we'll have been working together for 16 years. And I started in her production department as an assistant with events, producing events, and soon became a teacher and on staff. And then now we've been co-leading workshops together for about 12 years. And so I am trained as a coach and a counselor. And I've been sober for over 20 years, and so I bring my life experiences and wisdom, and Shakti and I, you know, have just continued to deepen our work and evolve our work and enrich our work together. So, you know, writing the book was really a sort of a milestone for us. We've been teaching this workshop for many years. And as Shakti was moving toward retirement, we decided to take the workshop that we had been co-leading together and to co-author a book together on that very subject. And we certainly have done a lot of work on our own relationships and our relationship with each other. So it was a really deep process to work together and create this book.
Yes. I would say that the book is a handbook on relationships as well as a guide to breaking out of patterns that tend to repeat themselves until we become more conscious of them. And becoming conscious of them sounds really difficult, but how difficult is it to become aware of these patterns that we go, you know, you might think that you can get rid of something by getting rid of a relationship, and then when you get involved with somebody else, suddenly you see the same pattern. So is it really hard, or is it somewhat easy?
I would say that becoming aware of the pattern is the easy part. And it's just, you know, using our work as a map to sort of understand the dynamic, really of what's happening inside you and what's in your inner world, and how that's being reflected and manifested outside of yourself and specifically in your relationships. So I think, you know, having that first level of awareness that this process is happening every day in all of our relationships is, you know, profound, you know, to use your word, and is a huge shift. And then moving through, you know, using that awareness to shift patterns takes time. It depends on how ingrained the pattern is, but it's like a muscle. We don't go to the gym and work out one time and are buffed. You know, it's slow repetitions over time. But I've had some profound sessions where there were patterns and wounding and stories painful from my childhood that just had plagued me my whole life. And I gained insight and awareness through this work into what that pattern was, and was really able to have, you know, a huge shift, life-changing shift. And some other shifts have taken, you know, baby steps over time. I think that there's, you know, there's an attraction to a book that is, you know, read this, follow this, and you'll get that. You know, it's like, just fix me, just tell me what to do, and I'll do it. But our experience, that it's through our lived experience, through walking through our days, that we make changes that can sustain us over time. And so our intention with the book was really to create a handbook where we could come alongside readers wherever they were and with whatever relationships they were addressing, and just come alongside to offer these tools and to bring awareness to, you know, what their experience was, and that they could have an awareness with that. And our experience with consciousness is not that it's a place that we arrive at, that we are now conscious. You know, consciousness for us is awareness, and whenever we can have awareness in the moment of being connected to something larger than ourselves, and for us to be, you know, so much more multidimensional, multifaceted than what we're aware of, just having those moments, we have access to those moments all day long. And they're fleeting, so we can have awareness, and then the next minute we can be, you know, cranky and snapping at someone. So it's fluid.
Good idea to carry a little notebook it's like you say, it's fleeting. It's almost like a dream. It's there, and then it's not, and then you've lost it. So it's probably good to have a little notebook to write it down. So, I mean, I'm fascinated by this idea of disowned parts of ourselves, so that when people are annoying to us, or we think they're annoying to us, that what we're really annoyed with is something within ourselves that we're projecting outward to that person, and then we can, you know, just dump our baggage onto them that way. So is that what the disowned self is?
Yeah, I think, yes. Our reactions to others, particularly when they're negative, so a judgment or irritation, that's a signpost for us, a flag alerting us to that we're playing out some part of our inner world in that relationship. And that rather than focusing on that person irritating us, which is usually our preferred method, we can take that and look at ourselves for what parts in us are being irritated by that person or their behavior, or what part of us wants to change that person or their behavior. And we begin to sort of unpack our reaction and investigate and drill down to what is going on inside of us. And what we usually find is that there's a primary way in which we've developed to get through life that has served us, and that part of us has a certain set of rules and ideals and ways that we should behave and think others should behave. And that it's often that primary part of us that's judging another person or another part in another person. And when these primary parts of us form, and we call them selves, when they form, in order to form and really fully develop, they usually oppress what is opposite. So if I'm really identified with being very driven and responsible, that part of me is going to deny or disown or minimize a part of me that is not responsible. So if somebody in my life is not being responsible, I'm going to push off on them because my primary selves have suppressed it in me. And so working with disowned selves, we're looking at first, what are we primarily identified with? How are we identified? And maybe out of balance, maybe over-identified, and in opposition to that, what have we suppressed or denied? And those are our disowned selves or our shadow side.
Interesting. Now, give us another example. Give us a real-life example of how that works.
I know you just did, but
go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. So when our personalities take form and shape in our early life and in the environments we're born into, the culture, our family, and those who raised us. And whatever ways we develop to equip ourselves, cope with life, be successful in life, have our needs met, be loved, be nurtured, that these ways that we develop in childhood often become our default setting as we move through life. And so for me, my childhood was plagued with lots of trauma and pain and difficulty. When I was 8 years old, right before my 9th birthday, my father was killed in a car accident. And there were 5 children. And so my mother, who had been a homemaker and was now left to take care of 5 children, and my father had been the provider and very strong. He's very gregarious and outgoing, so a lot of their social life was around him and his initiative, and she was more shy. And so I really developed a part that really took care of her and figured out what her needs are, but was also very responsible. So I became very responsible at 9 years old, you know, helping her with laundry, with dishes, with cooking, with my younger siblings. And so that part obviously helped me, you know, be loved and helped in my family, and that was the role I took on. And as I've continued to grow up and become an adult, that's been a very, you know, successful aspect in my personality and helping me have jobs and relationships and be successful in life. So it's something that I value that's helped me, but what would be disowned is parts of me that are more being energy, that are softer, are spontaneous, relaxed. So if I spend most of my day in a more driven aspect where I'm more active or action-oriented in a doing energy, and so my selves that are disowned or opposite have more to do with being energy. And so what that looks like in my relationships is, one of my relationships is with my son. I have a son, he's 22, and what I find when I'm getting angry at him is that I'm telling him he's lazy. You know, I'm like, he's not driven. He's not the same temperament as me. He takes his time. He needs lots of downtime. He doesn't like to rush. He doesn't want to do too many things at once. He really wants to take it easy and move through life. And if I am in my driven self and I want to get things done, I find that behavior extremely annoying. And I'm very frustrated. And what comes out of my mouth is like, you're lazy, you know, and critical of him.
Don't forget Mark Allen and his whole philosophy of being lazy. So,
exactly. That works. He's like, well, that's a really good thing. I know. And Sawyer, my son, loves that. Loves never work on Monday. Don't come in before 11. You know, that would work for him. But what my son is reflecting to me is what's disowned in me, which is a more relaxed pace. And maybe for me and my lifestyle, it wouldn't work for me to take naps and sleep as much as he did. But the essence, the essential quality underneath his character is something I need, which is to slow down, to be less committed, to have more unstructured time, where I have the space to be creative or spontaneous playful. And so he's a teacher for me. So I can look at him and be judgmental and critical, but he's reflecting back to me actually something I really need. And if I can take that moment and become conscious and aware in that moment that it's not about him and what he's doing wrong, it's really a reflection of where I'm out of balance, then I can be more neutral. And I can come back to him. I still may need him to run errands or do dishes or something, but I'm not coming from a place of criticism and judgment. I get that the way he's expressing himself and his life works for him, and it's different from me. But I can still hold him accountable for something that I need. But it's a totally different energy, and we're not, you know, entrenched in polarizing each other.
I'm just curious, a thought came to my mind about our children might exemplify our disowned parts of ourselves until we can heal that thing within ourselves. It could be that sometimes that works that way with our children.
Yeah, I think so. I think my other two children have more similar qualities to me in different ways. I mean, my children are similar to me, each in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest son and I are most opposite. I mean, I would say I have the most conflict with him, so he expresses that. But because I've developed this way of being, because we all have our primary selves, I'm never going to not be that way. My default will always be to be more serious or intense or, you know, driven or responsible and caretaking. That will always be the primary way I am in my life. But
mm-hmm.
when I have consciousness, I begin to have conscious choice about it. So I may, you know, be driven and goal-oriented and achievement-oriented, but I may able to have consciousness about it and have a clear schedule where I build in on time, or I take a walk at lunch, or I start my day earlier so I have quiet time, and later so I have quiet time in the morning. But I can have consciousness and awareness about how I'm navigating my day. I'm not just beholden and unconsciously being driven and achieving and churning out, you know, a driven agenda. And that's the whole goal of this book, is to really, you know, this work is really to have conscious choice.
Right. It sounds like it's also about having, once you become a little more conscious of what you're disowning and how you're treating other people, the ability to let go and surrender, as well as have compassion for those parts of yourself that you have disowned.
Absolutely. Well, and have compassion for the parts of us that are really, we're over-identified and out of balance. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I, you know, want to check out, I sort of push off on my primary selves and I'll go, you know, binge watch a whole season of, you know, some TV show or something, you know, and you know, and I want to break away from that way of being, but I can also have compassion that that part of me formed at a really young age. And had I not developed in that way, I may not be the person I am today. I mean, for sure I wouldn't be, but I might not even be here. So I can really embrace that part of me that's really driven. And at the same time, I can really embrace and create the space for the part that's more vulnerable, that's softer, that's more not knowing. Because if I'm really driven, then I always have to know and have answers and do everything right. And the other side of that is to not know and to not have answers and to make mistakes. And so I can also have compassion and embrace those parts of me. And so with conscious choice, and like I said, the goal of this work is really expanding to be large enough as a conscious being, to be large enough to hold all that we are, all the complexities and all the possibilities of who we are and who we have the potential to be, that we can, you know, stand out and expand our awareness and presence and bring all of that good and what we need.
So how do we go about integrating these parts of ourselves in a holistic way?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that. How do we develop
how
them?
How do we go about integrating the parts of ourselves that we've disowned? I was a student years ago of Roberto Azzagioli, and he talked about subpersonalities, and I think that Hal and Sidra Stone also talk about subpersonalities, which is, in retrospect, simply disowned parts of ourselves. So how do we integrate these parts? So you don't want to just throw them out and pretend they're somewhere else or think that there's somebody, you know, that they are a part of somebody else instead of yourself. We need to own them. And how do we do that?
Right. Yeah, so integration in this model, what it looks like is us expanding our awareness, our consciousness, and embracing all of who we are. And so the part of me that's really driven won't really integrate with the part that is less driven, or my lazy part, my spontaneous part, is not necessarily going to look at my responsible part and think that that part needs to be. So I, as Gina, the conscious being, become large enough to hold all these possibilities. And then I from this place of awareness, choose how much, given a certain situation, just what is the appropriate amount of this energy to be bringing into, how much, you know, how much do I need to tone down the stronger qualities in my personality? But that I begin to, you know, let's say navigate the nuances of these different selves, and if I have a more self, I'm going to bring in some other energies to be more protective and nurture those parts in. But so integration is really about us being conscious that and becoming aware of this process that it's unfolding in us every day in every interaction, and that can become aware of these different parts where I'm identified and over-identified and what I've denied, but that I'm holding them all. And the integration feel is when I'm in control, like I have power within these. I'm not unconsciously being, you know, sort of drugged and, you know, dragged around by a part of me, that I can have some awareness and consciousness about that.
Mm-hmm.
And as, you know, we use we use voice dialogue, where is a process where we can facilitate dialoguing with these different parts. And so if you're receiving a voice dialogue session, you're going to, you know, move to one side and be dialoguing with a part, and then come back to center and move to another side and talk to another part. And it's a very physical sensation. So these selves, you know, these parts of us that, you know, have these qualities and characteristics that we've been talking about, they have opinions and memories of us and our lives. But as the physical being, we get to shift into these different selves and experience that. And that informs our ability to integrate them into embrace them in what is appropriate in our lives.
Before anybody is going to check out, as far as our audience is concerned, I just want them to, are you still giving these relationship workshops, or are you both retiring from doing them?
Yeah, I'm continuing to teach and lead workshops, but Shakti is entering retirement.
Okay.
So I continue to teach and lead workshops and work as a coach. And we have a new site actually just coming up pretty much here any day at ShaktiGawain.com. Her site has our event calendar. And so if there's a live workshop, that would be led by me. And then I have a blog, which is also will be new in 2015, and that is called Soccer Mom Spirituality. And so there's information there as well. And then as far as purchasing the book, it can be made through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or NewWorldLibrary.com.
Well, that's interesting, the Soccer Mom Spirituality.
That's great.
When do you project that website to be live in 2015?
I have a blog, SoccerMomSpirituality.com is an active blog right now. I just am, I'm over the holiday break. I just am redoing it, and I have a new blog post coming out related to the book, and so that will be any day. And then Shakti's, we've completely redesigned it and added some new features. And so those also will be going live in the next few days. But they're both active and current and up on the internet.
Terrific. So is there one single way that we can, not one single way, but are there just some simple ways that we can become aware of these unconscious patterns? How would you suggest doing it?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, we lead the reader through many exercises. There's actually not many. There's several key exercises for this process. And so one is to just begin with a list of just, you know, sort of a short list, maybe 6 to 10 descriptions of yourself, one word descriptions. And we usually, through that list making exercise, reveal what are some of our primary selves, what are some of the primary ways in which we operate in our lives and move through our world. And so those qualities, the first level of this work is becoming aware that we are identified with and over-identified with and can be even out of balance in our lives with some of these aspects. So the awareness that we're over-identified or identified with these qualities is the first piece of work. And as soon as we begin to have separation from these primary ways of being in our lives, or have some by separation, you know, we're not discarding or getting rid of anything. We're just realizing, like for me, I realize that being responsible is just a part of me. That's not all who I am. It's not Gina, even though someone will meet me and I might have a strong, you know, responsible energy, but that's not all of who I am. And so the moment that I begin to separate by part of me and not all of me, space gets created, and immediately energies and different expressions move into that space. And all of a sudden I have the ability to choose and to access many different parts of myself. So the power of separating from identifying and separating from that primary self is significant. In fact, you could do a session, a facilitation, just facilitate that primary self over and over and just have significant change in your life. Because we're running, we're unconscious, we're locked in the trunk, and these parts of us are just running our lives. So just bringing awareness and consciousness to the process is completely life-changing and shifting. And then the second part of that process is moving into the shadow and what's disowned and why have we disowned it, and sort of the stories that are woven into those parts, and why we've shaped, you know, our personalities have shaped, been shaped by these experiences, and bring healing there. And that's a very tender process. And that can, you know, really unfold over time. Often when we start doing this work, our dream life becomes very active. For people who are creative, expressive artists, they are, all of a sudden begin to get flooded with lots of, you know, creativity and creative energy flowing. There's just the energy starts to ramp up and flow, and that can be very healing. So like I said, in the book, we guide the reader through these exercises. But if somebody hadn't read the book and was just curious about this, you know, if you went to go order your next meal and you just start thinking about there's part of you that, you know, wants you to have something, you know, gluten-free, low-fat, you know, protein style, dairy-free, you know, there might be a part of you that has ideas and rules about that. And then there's another part of you that might just want to order off the dessert menu. So it's a very subtle expression, but it's a very real process that's happening, that is happening all the time. So just to play with it a little bit, and to see that there really are these parts of us that have these different preferences and ideas, and just starting with that sort of, you know, like I said, a simple process.
Do you think there's actual parts of ourselves that we aren't even aware of?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're, you know, there's parts that we are just completely denied, you know, especially if there's been trauma in our lives, or, you know, we may not know we have access to a part, you know, that's more vulnerable or creative because it's so buried by the other parts of us. And that usually happens when, you know, it wasn't safe for us to express it, or if we expressed it, we were, you know, criticized or punished or, you know, felt abandoned or ostracized. So there's parts of us that we don't even know about. Anger and, you know, culturally unpleasant, you know, emotions, those are all selves within us that we suppress, especially in a new age movement, a body of work where we are moving toward spiritual enlightenment and being more spiritual and being more present in the moment. we're going to develop ideals that there's certain ways that it's not okay to be, but those parts live inside of us. And so we have to create space for them to be expressed, or at least know that they're there and that they bring value to our lives, even though it might not be immediately obvious. And so, you know, depending on whatever it is that we've developed that we think this is the right way to be, there's be an opposite energy that's totally disowned in us that, like you're saying, we may not even know it exists until we begin to investigate and create the space for it to be expressed.
I understand that our animals can, when they act out in a certain way, that they are expressing a disowned part of ourselves. Have you ever heard of that? Like our dogs especially, because dogs are the most emotionally close to humans of any other animal. But I suppose cats could fit into that category. So when they act out in some way that we find unacceptable, but we need to look at that as a mirror too.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of work with my pets, but that would certainly be interesting. I know that when I get really driven and immersed in a project and, you know, sort of isolated, my pets definitely act out to get attention.
Yes.
But there are people who use this work specifically with pets and families with their pets as well. But I haven't, myself, I haven't done a lot of it, but I can see how that is really shifting for other people.
Yes, there's a book written by a New World Library author called Your Dog is Your Mirror. And he goes very deeply into that. And it's really, it might be interesting for you and Shakti to read that and realize that it just seems like it might be an additional way to access parts that we aren't even aware of within ourselves.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Our animals really are amazing creatures, and when they become disturbed in reference to their own harmony, lack of harmony that they are disturbed about, then we need to pay attention. That's really what I get out of that. But it's very deep. They help us with that.
Yeah.
How can journaling help to raise our awareness of our disowned and our disowned selves? And then you also talk about archetypal selves too, that you could talk a little bit about.
The journaling is part of the exercise. You know, we recommend, you know, ideally if you're live and in person, to be facilitated is the best. If you're working with, you know, you're wanting to move into this energy and understand, you know, experientially, what is this primary self? What is the disowned self? Really two opposites usually in response to a certain situation in your life. But journaling can really help too. You know, you can set the intention to journal from the primary voice in you, that primary self or that part of you that has the strongest opinion about how you should be doing something. And just to let that just free flow, just let that self just express itself and say its opinions and really just allow it to go. And usually just after the first sentences, it's free-flowing. You don't have to force it or anything. That self is just ready to tell you everything it thinks. And then after that, you know, to take a contemplative moment and just to allow that energy to settle and to shift down or shift out a little bit. And then to invite another energy or opposite self to that voice. And sometimes people do journaling then with the left hand, but you can also do it with the right. And just express another energy or another aspect of your personality and allow that to come through. And often if it's a more vulnerable or disowned self or voice, then there may need a little more, you know, prompting or space or time for that self to really express itself. But the journaling really help bring awareness for us, you know, as conscious beings, as you know, allowing us to have this experience of really embracing these different parts. And the goal is, you know, especially if we're journaling, let's say we have a decision we're trying to make and we're going to have, you know, part of me thinks this, part of me thinks that. And making the decision isn't really the end game. It's really becoming conscious of the process and exploring and dialoguing with the different parts that have different ideas about the decision we're making. And that as we, you know, embrace those different parts, we can find a balance and a wholeness that's right for us and make a decision from that place. It's very different. If we're trying to force ourselves to make a decision, often we can trigger these different cells and they just polarize and it's like children, you know, one wants one thing, one wants another. But we can become large enough to embrace all of them, and it often shifts, you know, the overall dynamic.
Yeah, this is a great exercise, and towards the end of the book, in the creative visualization technique section, where it's called writing affirmations. So just as an example, it says, we'll use what it says about you. I, Gina, am now healing my relationship with my mother. Gina, you are now healing your relationship with your mother. Gina has now healed her relationship with her mother. And now when you write that stuff out, you do so consciously and not by rote. And then you note the resistance and write the resistance on the back of the paper. And I would think, you know, this stuff like I'm not really good enough and I can't ever have a good relationship with my mother and she hates me or whatever. And the more that you do that and work it through and then finally you don't have that resistance anymore, it could even, you know, all of a sudden you find that your relationship with your mother is healed, you know, kind of thing.
In the back of the book, or towards the end of the book, we created a whole section of creative visualization exercises, affirmations, core belief process, because we feel like, you know, we refer to this body of work as a psycho-spiritual body of work. So we've spent a lot of time talking about the psychological, intellectual aspects of the work, and just with our mind, how are we breaking that down, and what does that look like, and how are we investigating this? But there's also a strong, you know, spiritual component, which is about bringing presence with ourselves, you know, becoming present with ourselves, and how are we, you know, we do as much work as we can, but at some point we need to let go. We need to turn it over to a power greater than ourselves. We need to turn it over to the universe, that we have to have that dimension of spiritual help and support and assistance. And so, you know, you through guided imagery, a great way to integrate this work in that we're affirming the work we've been doing, but we're also releasing it. And each of these exercises gives us another tool to, in part, uncover, you know, like you're identifying the resistance, so partly to uncover another aspect of the process, but also just begin to affirm and integrate the new healing that we're walking into, the new possibility and the new future that we're creating for ourselves. Because that is an integral part to the work, you know, is to create that contemplative space and space for integration and for grounding the work and the energies into the present moment, and also releasing, you know, the outcome or our investment or attachment to the process, but just to give us some breathing room. And so we always open our workshops with different combinations of the exercises, and we always close them with a different set of exercises. And so we wanted to mirror that, obviously, in the book.
Right. And there can be, you can work out your relationship with money, as an example, with the exercise I just talked about. And, you know, your relationship with money and lifting out your negative beliefs or your core beliefs about money, because people are really messed up when it comes to abundance and financial abundance and their relationship. You know, money is evil, the root of all evil. People are really messed up when it comes to money. That would be a good tool to use for one's relationship with money, I would think. Very
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's so great that you brought that up, because we can look at the different selves in us in relation to money. You know, we probably have bits of us. Each of us have different parts of us in relationship to money. So I know that I really struggled in my 20s, and once I began to do this work, I realized that I, you know, the nine-year-old in me who had taken responsibility was sort of managing finances. Well, of course a nine-year-old can't manage finances. So I was dealing with that. You know, but I agree with you that there's parts of us that either are, you know, identified in a spiritual belief system that, you know, abhors money or that's gluttonous or we should give it away. But really breaking down those belief systems helps us find freedom. And we may decide to, you know, acquire money or give money away, but that the shift happens in us. By bringing, you know, awareness to what is happening in us and being reflected in these dynamics. So excellent point to bring up. And it's really rich work that we can apply to every area in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. Because we have more relationships with so many things than just people that we can just, it's like taking away the layers of an onion. It just is never ending, really.
Really, it's not. And someone was asking me about that, and I was like, Shakti and I are still using this work today. It's not like we've self-actualized and arrived at a point, you know, where we've landed a plateau. You know, we're constantly in process, and not always intense, you know, heavy process, but we're constantly evolving. We're constantly becoming more aware, and it's is an opportunity for us to expand upon and build upon the experiences.
And it can be fun. It can be a lot of fun. It doesn't have to be
hard work. Right. Yes,
because,
exactly.
Because when you gain awareness of things and of anything, it's a joyful process.
Yes, absolutely. I love the word joy because for me, joy is the happiness skill that's not tied to circumstance, because we can feel joy whether we have or have not feel joy in difficult times. And so I love that word, but it's really, like you're saying, we can have a playful aspect. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'll say something and I'll just keep it strongly as a self in me that thinks, you know, so opinionated. And I mean, it's funny. You know, it can help shift it. And anyway, so you really can have that as well.
Yeah, I think it is fun. Gina, we've come to the end of our wonderful 45 minutes together. I really, really enjoyed it. I know that we've given people a lot to think about and to apply to their own lives. And I certainly recommend buying this book, The Relationship Handbook. It's easy to get on Amazon. So go for it.
Thank you. Thank you for your support. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And have a joyous, there again, joyous holiday, and have a great reflection of your life and the life to come in 2015. So, peace to you.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.